This is East Carolina All-American Brian Packard, and we're talking Pirate Baseball and the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate Baseball.
To Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective, brought to you by Next Level Training Center in Greenville and nextleveltc.com. They have a Facebook page. Call them as well, 252-756. Next, Pirates split another series. Disappointed about that. And with us, as always, my good buddy from China Grove, North Carolina. I wish I had some walk-up music. I don't. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, guys. Hope y'all are. Like you said, Dave, unfortunately, a valiant effort by the Pirates this afternoon came up just short, falling 11-9 as they attempted to take the series.
No doubt about it. And having right now with us the play-by-play, I should say the analyst, I'm sorry, sitting by the play-by-play voice of the Pirates normally, but not on the road. And, of course, the all-time winningest coach, Dr. Gary Overton. How are you, Coach?
Oh, really good, Dave. Thanks so much.
Always great to have you. And a dear friend of ours that we're glad to have back on the show, Mike Mullis. Mully, how are you, man?
Everything's great. I feel very honored to be riding shotgun with a couple legends tonight, but obviously to be in the presence of Coach O is always great.
You guys are really kind.
Well, guys, I thought that we were going to be talking about a 3-1 series that could have gone once again with these American – conference games. I tell you what, we could lose all four. You can win one, you could win two, three, or all four. And anybody that thought we were going to just easily walk through this conference, they obviously don't watch college baseball. They don't know anything probably about baseball. We started out strong, I know, with a couple series there with the mops, as they call them now. We've had two splits here the last couple weeks. I just want to get you to go around the horn here, around the round table, if you will. Starting off, we'll do Coach O. What were your thoughts, Coach, on this past weekend overall?
Well, first of all, going into the weekend, I think anyone would have been pleased with any type of a series win, whether it had been 3-1, 4-0. And certainly a split is not a loss for the weekend, not by any means. When you feeding off what you said, Dave, when you look earlier in the season, if someone said we'd be 12-4 in the league and 30-9 overall, I don't think that no question we would have taken it. And at the same time, you would assume that that would have been good enough for first place at this particular time. Now, Tulane has made their run. But as far as the two weekends, last weekend and this one, both going 2-2, there's not a hotter club in the American right now than UCF, the team that we played last week. And, of course, Wichita State has had very good a very good start to its season. A little lull in the midseason, but starting back to be warm again.
And we have Bubba, you on deck. Mully, what did you think about overall the series this weekend?
I think my statement, Dave, is more to a statement of the season, and it's all everything's bizarre right now, right? I mean, we don't even have to go down that path. I think what's got to happen for the Pirates to get to where they want to be is one word, and that is consistency. And we're seeing too many ebbs and flows, too many ups and downs. And it's really difficult because all of us are homers. We are all we love our coaching staff. We love the guy. I mean, and so it's very difficult, to say that. But I think. Being realistically critical, we just have to have more consistency, and that's all the way around. And Dave, before we went on the air, you made a comment about the errors, and we've seen that happen in this season before, where It's almost like, it's kind of like my golf game. Like if one aspect's working really well, then something else shows up and creates a problem. And we're seeing where it's the inconsistencies, you know, it's the inconsistencies that are causing a problem. And yeah, we're down an arm, and that's a big arm, but at the same time, you've got a full roster of guys that you expect the next person to take the ball and do what they're tasked with. And it's tough when you put a young person into that situation. They get the desired outcome, which might be a ground ball or a pop up, this drop, whatever happens. It's very difficult from a mental standpoint. You know, when you've got two outs in the inning, has been my experience, that the ball goes up and you expect the ball to be caught, the ball hits the turf, it's very difficult to reboot. It's a special young person that can keep themselves
right
focused enough to just turn the page. So I think that's what we're looking at with the Pirates. It's not a, obviously, it's not a lack of talent. It's not a, I think there's still some work to find themselves. Tough part is there's 12 games left. But when you're playing games in bunches like this, it's a different set of challenges. And I mean, it from a management standpoint, it's got to be very, very difficult.
No doubt about it. Bubba, I want to get your thoughts as we go around the table, around the horn, so to speak, on this weekend.
Yeah, I'll just expand a little bit on what Coach O said, and then what Mully said as well. As far as Coach O's statement about being 39 and 12 and 4, you would have certainly taken that. And then, like Mully's saying, with the inconsistencies, you look at this weekend. I mean, you run rule them in game one on Friday, 10-0 in seven innings. And then the second game was a competitive game for 6.5. And then they all of a sudden explode. Eight runs, just one out there in the bottom of the seventh. We respond the way you would hope and the way you would expect in game three, winning 11-3. And then today we had a good start. And after that, we, you know, fell asleep some, made some atypical mistakes and just dug the hole a little bit too deep. But you had to be proud of the response today after we fell behind 11-3 in what, the fourth inning?
No doubt about it, guys. One of the things, going back to Mully, and I want to come back to you, Coach, on another question. But, Mully, when you were talking about consistency, I was thinking about that when we were getting rocked early. It's like think about the UNCW game. You think about the game in Chapel Hill, UNC. There's certain games where we let things get way out of hand. And then, you know, they have moments of brilliance like today where they come back. You can't give – I don't care, Coach, you've coached for many years – and you've been around the game, and Mully has too, Coach, you coach as well. You can't give, Bubba, all of us have coached, you can't give any team, you can't spot them runs. And really, I mean, the fact that they made it 11-9 and respect when having a chance is a miracle. You can't give these guys, college baseball players at this level, anything, right?
Nothing at all. And you're certainly right, Dave. The bigger the deficit, the harder to overcome. We know that, but any deficit at all is an uphill climb. But to do it from 8 runs back, 6 runs back, and, of course, I think that vacillated 2 or 3 times today, it's just tough. It's so hard to do. You know, going back to your point on consistency, and Bubba brought out the fact that we made a really valiant effort today. Likewise, the team has been inconsistent at times. Individuals have been inconsistent, and then games have been that way. Where we made the good effort today, just last weekend against UCF, even with a small lead, we were somewhat lethargic in two of the games, the two losses, and there was never a comeback mounted, and never even a threat, really. So, you know, different forms of consistency that Mully brings out, and the Pirates have to find and search for those answers the rest of the way.
And Coach O, you're talking about playing from behind, you know, just that challenge, much less 8 runs down. So then everything's magnified. There's such a small margin for error. So then when you hit into a double play like we did a couple of times today during the middle of our comeback, it really stands out even more so.
Yeah, into the eighth inning, we had cut it to two. And I think a lot of listeners, really, like all of us, believed that the Pirates would do it, would get it done. But you're right, it was just so far. And then that small margin of error, a short inning in the eighth, and then double play in the ninth, and the game was over. Good point.
So, guys, there's a couple points that I would like to make on that. The difference in a Division I college baseball player, and I'm talking a talented person, and we can look at a Gavin Williams, we can look at a Connor Norby, pick your guy. The difference in that collegiate athlete and a Hall of Famer in Major League Baseball is the ability to go out and not have the deep dives, right? It's the ability to go out and minimize the downside. And it's tough. But that also, if you look at teams historically that are Omaha kind of regular attendees, it's the same trend, right? We go out and these teams minimize their downside. And right now, our club's having a tough time doing that. And it's got to be extremely difficult to manage. So, but the consistency thing comes with the baseball, as we all, is such a flow game, right? I mean, to get into rhythm of the game, to get into the flow of the game, to get into the rhythm of the season, well, you've got a very unusual situation again with no – look, right now, in my opinion, the best thing that could happen for the club where it is an opportunity to play a game or two midweek to kind of try to maintain or get back on track. Right now, it's a lot more like football. The trend is not positive for where the program or the team is. But now they've got to wait 5 days to get a chance to go again. And the beauty of baseball has always been, I mean, in my time coaching and playing, and I was always coached this way, Coach, I would imagine you same thing. You could enjoy a win until midnight, and you could languish in a loss until midnight. But we got to turn the page and go again tomorrow. Now it's a lot more the football mentality. You get out there, you're starting to play. You've got 4 games in a weekend. You got 2 games in at least one of those days. Man, it's a whole different environment than what baseball was really, I don't know, meant to be played in, or at least in my lifetime, it's a different deal. You go play a game today, you're going to try and play again tomorrow. They don't have that right now, and it's tough. And I think there's probably, look, nobody's more aware of what's going on than the guys in that dugout. And when it doesn't matter what sports you're playing or what you're doing, if you're in a scuffle and things start to go south on you a little bit, it almost amplifies your expectations. And then it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy to where you start to go, oh no, here we go again. So it's tough. And look, we're talking about really, really talented young people. And that's a dynamic in and of itself, not to mention all the extra stuff they're having to go through. Everybody in the country is facing the same deal. I get that. It's just it works against what we need the most, and that's the consistent effort day in, day out.
Mike, really, really good. I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask you the very thing. We talk about it all the time, and Cliff, gives the media a hard time and jokes with us about. We talk about these 4-game going adding to Mully's thoughts there. The very fact that we have these 4-game series, my concern is that it's kind of like, I've said it a lot, but it's like a regional. Every weekend is a regional. And my concern is the very fact with as far as our pitching is concerned, I want to ask you guys, and you guys are closer to the sport than I am, the very fact with Spivey today, is that a matter of he just had a bad day, or do you think it's as far as any kind of injury, only a third of an inning, he got rocked. And I don't know any other way to say that. I'm not trying to be critical or mean. But it was a tough day for him at the office, and that put us way behind. Put it behind us behind the eight ball is an understatement. So how do we? He's a guy that we really, really need to step up coming, you know, in June.
Yeah, no question that Carter certainly has the ability. He's a guy that runs the fastball up there at 93, and the hitters even say that his movement and life is really outstanding. And he's not had a problem in the past, it seems, to command it. Some pitchers fulfill roles different than others. I'm not sure that his role is that of a starter. It may be. It may not be. Coach Dietrich and Coach Godwin know that far better than any of us, and they see it on a daily basis. But in his starting appearances, it's been I know there are flashes of really good, but at the same time, I think finding Carter's role is going to be of the utmost importance here. But let me go back to one other thing on the pitching staff with consistency and position players as well. Mully brings out really good points. That works. That's outstanding. That also, we do have players like Gavin Williams and Thomas Francisco, who are both very consistent. And I think when players like Carter Spivey look at those two guys and say, what do I need to do to be consistent and where can I find it? I think that's when the team is really going to come together with the maximum gelling of this particular club.
No question about it, guys. As far as one other big question as far as the season is concerned, and I know, Bubba, you want to break down the games. We'll do that in just a second. Coach O and Mully, we'll start with you, Coach O. Have we one of the things I was hearing from fans, including us with our group text this weekend, have we played ourselves out of a if you're in the selection committee, have we played ourselves out of a national seat?
I don't think we've played ourselves out of it by any means, but I think we were in it at one particular point, and I think we're going to have to work our way back into that mode. From the national standpoint, if it were today, I couldn't see that happening. But at the same time, there's plenty of baseball left for us to move back into it.
Yeah, no, and I would have to 100% agree with Coach. I think it's bad timing. So these regional selections are being made, obviously, you know, May 10th, May 11th. The problem, our challenge is the conference is obviously not what it has been. I mean, the worst thing that's happened to this conference is having a really bad Houston team. Now, we've kind of seen that picked up a little bit with Tulane and the emergence of, you know, Wichita State has made the conference somewhat more well-balanced. You know, the losing of UConn, all these things. So now we're two games out of the hunt or two games off first place with Tulane coming to town. It's going to be right in that vacuum of where this decision is made just from a regional host standpoint. The timing's bad. To Coach O's point, if we could play out the stream and in the next 12 games we go 9-3, 10-2, then I think that is a national seed worthy type effort. We don't have that luxury. So I think we're going to have to take kind of play the cards the way they're dealt. Who knows exactly how all that's going to shake out? Who knows? And Coach O, you would know way better than any of us on this program. I don't know. What are the criteria for the selection? I mean, is it COVID-centric? Is it because it would seem to me, if that's the case, that Texas, the state of Texas, the state of Florida, the state of Georgia, who has lifted restrictions way past what North Carolina's done, it would financially, from a business standpoint, it would make the most sense to load those states down with games. But I, again, we're in a it, it's we're in you know, the uncharted waters. So I you know, but I think from this community and for you know, East Carolina baseball, I think Cliff would tell you right now. I mean, Cliff is a realist. I mean, he's as honest a guy. I think Cliff would tell you, we don't deserve that national seed right now. Doesn't mean we don't deserve the opportunity to get it back. But right now, we're, again, timing is everything. It's, you know, we're stuck in the vacuum.
No question about it, guys. And like you said, the great thing about it, Pirate fans, calm down. There is still plenty of baseball to be played, and we'll be talking about, obviously, hey, there's nothing like our program to make you want to talk about drama, you want to talk about excitement. This weekend, we'll be talking about that later on, but this weekend series is even bigger than we ever dreamt of a week or two ago. All of a sudden, that's for maybe for all the marbles for the conference. So we'll be talking about that. Bubba, I know that we wanted to talk about breakdown.
Dave, can I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure. That's right.
Because it kind of – one thing struck another, and again, you guys feel free to disagree. I'm just kind of telling you the way I look at it. I can promise you that nobody's more aware that the Pirate fan base, the baseball fan base, wants to host a regional. Listen, folks, the ultimate goal is to get into a regional. If you happen to host, that's a double bonus. Somebody that gets into the regional will win the national championship, right? That sounds like I'm dumbing it down. But somebody is going to do that. It doesn't matter if we have to go to – I mean, I remember when UVA had to open up with San Diego State facing the big dog Strasburg, okay, years ago. And I saw that, and I'm like, man, that's a tough draw. Well, I mean, you can't drop your lip. And you go out there and they dominated Strasburg, got hot as a firecracker, ran away to Omaha. So Pirate Nation, the fan base, understand we got to keep doing what we're doing. We got to get a little more consistent. We got to get a little better. But if we don't host a regional, yes, selfishly, I would love that. But if we don't host a regional, it's not the end of the world. People come back through losers brackets. They come back. It's not the end of the world if we don't host a regional. It's not a birthright that East Carolina baseball will host a regional. So because I hear that all the time, and it's like, listen, hosting is great. Being in a regional is where it's at.
No question about it, Coach. I know that you know all about that for sure, with hosting regionals and being at regionals yourself or the like for the NCAA for many years. Just to be at a regional as well, being an official, is a huge honor too, right?
It really is. And they've been very good to me, the NCAA, but it is very, very much an honor. Dave, I do want to go back and bring one point to something all of you brought up. It is a COVID year, and it's a unique year, and we all can only guess as to what will transpire. Usually the financial piece doesn't factor in too often, but I will say this, two things the Pirates have going for them, a regular season championship. Obviously it's possible right now. We don't want to say that it's done, but, that is a feather in the Pirates' cap, and also a tournament championship. Anyone that wins both a regular season and the tournament, they are looked on very favorably when it comes to things like, as Mully was pointing out, national seeds to move up into the top eight. Those two things are very good and very important pieces.
No doubt about it. Hey, Bubba, are you ready to break down the games? We'll go ahead and I'll pitch it to you now.
Let's just take a look at game one. Pirates win 10-0. Another stellar start by Gavin Williams.
Whoever wants to take that, Mully or Gary.
Oh, no. I that could be the end of that breakdown. Good job, Bubba.
Yeah. I try to do what I can do.
Yeah. You know, Gavin it reminds me of the, that he is what we thought he was. It's great to see him have that success. I will tell you, And I do get asked my opinion, and it is my opinion is completely irrelevant as to how high a draft pick is of Gavin, how high a draft pick Gavin will be. I think he'll do fine. I think he's got to polish up a little bit and, again, be a little more consistent with his secondary stuff to be a first-rounder. But he's doing what he needs to do to help the Pirates, and Pro Bowl will take care of itself.
Yeah, and to your point, he not only threw very well on Friday night, we all know what he did, the 10-0 shutout, but at the same time, every one of his starts has been just that way. He is it seems like he's not trying to elevate strikeout numbers. Instead, he's pitching, and even as a power pitcher, which what's the old saying that they can make mistakes and get away with it. So that in itself is going to allow him to have 9 to 10 strikeouts per game. And as Mully said, you know, with a little more consistency with his breaking stuff, you could say what he's doing now is dominant. That would be much more so, but he's doing it on a week by week basis. And he's getting the Pirates off to a good start every weekend. He certainly can be classified as a stop.
And you know what, Coach? It's what's crazy in the time that we've been involved in the game. If you had a guy like Gavin, a 6'5", 6'6", right-handed it through upper to mid-90s, he was like a unicorn. He was an anomaly, right?
Well, oh,
now,
yeah.
I'm not saying they fall out of trees, but there's a bunch of them. And, like, Tulane has a kid. I watched Tulane play actually Wichita State last weekend. Tulane's got a 6'8 right-hander that throws the stitches off of it, and he pitches up in his own. He came in out of the bullpen the game that I saw. But, I mean, those guys are out there now. The difference is, you know, when I was coming out, if somebody threw 90, that was really firm. Now it's 92, 93 minimum to be in that really firm category. The differentiator is the secondary stuff. If I knew that I was going to face 92, 93 flat all night and they didn't have anything that could get me out otherwise, I was going to have a pretty good night off that person. So that's kind of the differentiator for Gavin. And these guys now, man, these kids, I mean, thanks to, you know, the next levels of the world and all the training that takes place, guys are getting a whole lot more swings than they ever got before. And so it's a little more of a refined deal. Now, some of the subtle nuances of the game are lost. Kind of a trade-off there. But from a – you put a freshman in a batter's box. I mean, look at it. You look at the program here. How many – and, again, a weird COVID year, but we have Makarevich. We have kids that are true freshmen that are competing in a batter's box every day because they are just getting – exponentially more swings than I ever dreamed of getting. For whatever reason, the pitchers have to have the secondary stuff to be able to compete at the highest level.
Offensively, guys, in that first game, something else that jumped out. You know, it's not like we had a 7 spot or something. We scored in 5 out of the first 6 innings, and you had Bryson Wohl 3 for 3, and then you also had 2 hit games from Francisco, Agnos, and Norby.
Yeah, and what a great thing to see Bryson come around. I thought early in the year he had a little funny deal with his hands away from his body. He's pulled him in, told him a little bit, and he's really shortened that stroke up. And again, you know, Cliff, and I agree with Cliff on this. I'm not a big batting average guy. Let's go up and have a quality at bat. And if we hit the ball on the butt and we hit it at somebody, it is what it is. Bryson has made some loud outs too. And the nice thing is, it seems like, you know, if this was Sesame Street, the word of the day would be consistency. But he's been equally as effective on both sides of the plate, which is, to me, a great sign. Francisco's coming around. We're seeing, you know, Connor Norby's cooled off a little bit, but that's just called waking up. I mean, the dude has been in a unbelievable place for the whole season. I don't think that, again, the challenge of the club, we, you know, as soon as I say this, we'll have another high strikeout night. You know, we're prone to have a big strikeout night. And we've seen it a couple times this year where we punched out too many times. But it seems like the approaches are better. There's a lot more effort with two strikes to stay in the at bat. And you got to think, Cadell's going to come around. He's kind of in a little bit of a lull. I mean, I like where the club is offensively. And I think there's some interesting guys off the bench that add some kind of different dynamics to what the offense is capable of doing. So, yeah, I mean, I think they keep beating it around, putting the pressure on the defense. Coach O, I bet you've said it 1,000 times. I know I have. All we have to do is win every inning. And you win every inning, you're going to win the ball game. So, I mean, it's a real simple thing. Let's scratch one. If we scratch one 9 times and they don't get any, we're going to win 9-0 every time.
No question right now, ladies and gentlemen. The third Road Warrior, if you're a wrestling fan, you know what I'm talking about. Let's bring in Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, fellas? Sitting here listening to the conversation about you know, the regional projections and, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Tulane coming up this weekend and the seeding coming out, or not the seeding coming out, but the host site's coming out following week after the Tulane game. And Herb Mulley just talking about game one against, I guess, Wichita. Have you guys, Coach O, have you ever, and I'm sure you have you ever seen a bigger parallel, a bigger just paradigm switch between game one and game two, where we were so dominant game one, and then, you know, we 7-run rule them game one, they 7-run rule us game two?
Yeah, you rarely see that. That's highly unusual. But you go back to that game one, and to Bubba's point about the offense and it being in good shape, almost every hitter in the lineup with an extra base hit as well. That was a display of power. Now, obviously, we lacked that as you pointed out in game two. But game one, I think the power is very impressive. In addition to the offensive prowess in itself.
Good, you know, question, now, yeah. Really, three of the four games, we hit the ball, you know, pretty well, even in the loss today. And, in fact, the loss today, I love to see a team fight back. And even though we lost, to me that was impressive. And something to me, even though it was a loss that we can build off of, to come back the way we did, being such a large deficit and almost being able to come back and win the game.
Yeah, no, and the trade-off there, Kyle, is you like the coaching staff, I can only say how I would feel. You appreciate the effort in the comeback, but the lack of effort, and I say lack of effort, I'm not saying the guys weren't out there trying, but to get into that hole is the problem. And again, it's kind of a microcosm of what we've talked about, you know, through the show here. And I will tell you, every time I see, especially on a Sunday game or like a midweek game when life is normal, a team jumps out to a big lead, I always know that game's going to go that much longer because all the bullpens are taxed. And one of the hardest things to do in college baseball is pitch with a big lead. Because you're going out and saying to your – if you've got the big lead, you're going out telling your guy, hey, man, pound the zone, live it, see how far they can hit it. You play the game in twos and fours. Just, you know, if you give up a solo job, it's not a big deal. If we get – you know, we got a 10-run lead. We're in the fifth. We give up a solo home run every inning, we're going to win by 5. So – and that's if we don't build anymore. So it's a very interesting dynamic, and those are the things that the average consumer of the game probably they don't realize those things are happening. But I'm telling you, it is very. I mean, I almost hated to have big leads unless they were, if we were up huge in the sixth, and I knew the seventh was around the corner, and I had one guy that if I had to bring somebody in to get me 2 outs. I knew I had that guy. It's again, it's the ebbs and flows. It is. I know Cliff appreciated the effort on the comeback, but how did we get in this position is the better question.
Well, obviously the way we're starting, well, we started 2-0 today, for example. So you think Pirates are off to a great start, and then you get, you know, literally, man, the third of an inning for Carter Spivey. That I'm not trying to pick on him again, but I didn't anticipate that, see that today, Coach. I really didn't.
Yeah, and the hole is just so big, and a little bit scoring in the first and then giving up a 6-spot like that is a little demoralizing to the offense. We all talk about the comeback, and the comeback, it took a couple of innings for us to get our feet back under us to start the comeback because we were a little bit shocked. Yeah, it affects, as Mully said, it affects all of us, or it affects position players and pitchers in different ways that a lot of people don't see. And that's one. It was a mental blow to those guys in the positions.
And to piggyback Coach O, the hardest thing to do, one of the hardest things to do is play defense after giving up a 6-spot. So if you stand out there and kind of marinate on your feet, and it's game 4, so these dudes have played a lot of baseball going into this game, and now you get, again, we lose the rhythm of the game, you get caught on your heels a little bit. And I'm going to tell you that it doesn't just happen in one inning, because as you flatten out, it's especially game 4, it's kind of like coming off a caffeine buzz, right? Where you drink a Red Bull, you're fired up, but the bottom out is way lower than the height of the firing up. And so when you sit out there and go through that kind of beat down for that length of time, you know, the most important player in any baseball game is old Mo. And whatever dugout has old Mo, momentum, is going to have a chance to win that ball game. So it's a tough deal, especially in these 4-game weekends.
Coach O, and Mully, how much, obviously, not having Wisenhunt, Hunt, one of your starters, sucks being down a starter in your rotation, but how much does it mess with your baseball team beyond just your rotation? I mean, obviously it affects the bullpen, but does it affect the guys at the plate? Is it in their head at all? Hey, well, we're going to be, you know, playing this day without our normal guy at the mound. I mean, does it affect the team more so than just the rotation?
Well, from a position player standpoint, I don't think it affects them with the bat, Kyle. But where it does affect them is out on defense, because they're now resting back on their heels instead of on their toes. And a lot of times you're a half step slower. Your mentality has changed out there. You're wondering why a pitcher isn't doing something to make the adjustments to help get us out of that particular inning. In so doing, it definitely affects the position players on defense. But with the bat, I don't think so. I think like today, once we regroup and once we get recharged, then a lot of times there's a lot of, a lot of momentum. There's a lot of creation of momentum just by creating offense as well.
And look, Kyle, every position player thinks they would be the best pitcher on the club. And every pitcher thinks they can play shortstop, hitting a 3-hole, and they would hit 25 home runs. Mm-hmm. I think that and remember right now, again, with COVID, Cliff's carrying, I think it's 22 arms in totality. Now they can't all, they're not all on the active roster for the weekend. He's going to tell his guys, and I would tell them if they were my guys. Matter of fact, I wouldn't even bring it up, to be honest with you. We know he's not available right now. It's, you know, we hear it in sports all the time. It's the next man up mentality. And we're talking about a freshman. I mean, we're not talking about a guy that is your junior, like we've seen around college baseball. There's been a couple really good pitchers that are down that are draft eligible, whatever. We're not talking about that guy that came out last year and won 15 games. We're talking about a guy that it should not be, in my opinion, it should not be that impactful. The reality is it only matters if other guys aren't getting their job done. If the guys that went out and towed the bump wearing the purple and gold would have gotten it done, we would not even be having this conversation right now. Easier said than done.
That's exactly right. And that's just like you said, guys, with that very fact, also the fact that today when Bubba was talking about the very fact that when we get down so big, every mistake, you notice every mistake more. An error, normally you just say, gosh, guys, we can't have that. But then when you're down 8 runs or whatever it was early on, then that becomes even a big, we talked about earlier about a bigger spotlight.
Yeah, I mean that kind of falls into the and I don't mean to be condescending, but that's kind of the Captain Obvious mindset, right? Like it's we can't play from behind. If we already know that we have a deficiency in the bullpen or if our pitchers aren't where they need to be, then the last thing we can do is magnify that by playing from a deep hole.
No question. And with the way that when you're playing, was it 4 games in 72 hours, then you can't have, you know, that things are tight to begin with, right, coach, as far as the schedule, it's a lot tighter than what we're used to seeing.
Yeah, as the weekend goes on, you certainly have to gear it up more and more. You're charged up for game one anyway. But as the series goes on and you're making adjustments, that's the mental part of the game. But the physical part, you have to physically prepare, and by Sunday, and you've played your 4th 9-inning game in 3 days. Sometimes you have to charge that body really, really strongly with the mind. But yeah, you have to be prepared each day.
And guys, giving us a chance to make that comeback today. What a job Kim Colmore did in relief after not faring well in game 2 on Friday. Cam just pitched extremely well today to give East Carolina a chance.
Yeah, you know what? And I mean, Cam, man, what a bright spot he's been. I mean, he has taken full advantage of his opportunity, taken full advantage of this extra year of eligibility. He's a fun dude to watch. And I think he, in his mind's eye, I think he sees himself as like a real guy, like a dude. Like he bounces around the mound. He's got a little swagger. It's not a confidence issue when it doesn't go right. The reality is we all have bad days at the office. Man, I have really enjoyed watching him. If you would have told me going into the year he would be this big of a part of the pitching staff, it would have concerned me. But man, he has been very, very good.
And Bubba, most impressive is that he didn't have a good outing Friday night, and he responded today, and he went through some innings. If he doesn't, Pirates have no shot. No chance at all. He kept the Pirates in the game and gave them an opportunity to win. And you're right. But he also could fulfill a lot of roles. By that, I mean, we know what he does. He pitches in the back end of the bullpen. But he could also be a long reliever. And if push came to shove, I think he's a guy that possibly could start if needed.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you the success of any team that goes deep is going to be that surprise outing. It's going to be that start. And, like, I'm going to tell you, the Groves kid, the right-handed freshman, I mean, I like that dude a lot. I mean, I think there's some sleeper kind of arms. Colmore could be one of them, Coach, that you could see taking a ball to win the conference tournament or – taking the ball to I completely agree. I mean, there are enough quality bodies there that there's a surprise in that bullpen somewhere. And look, I'll even give credit to the Ginn kid who kind of, you know, the average consumer of the game does understand that the person that you can hand the mop to and say, hey, look, we're down 7 in the 8th, just get us out of here so we don't burn another arm. That Ginn kid has kind of fallen into that role, and I'm sure it's not the role he desires, but it is a critical role to go out there and get 4, 5, 6 outs when you're kind of out of the ball game. What he's done, though, is gone out and had pretty good innings from as an out getter. He's not giving up a lot of loud noise. He's been able to kind of manage his role. So, I mean, I think there's some surprises down there. And again, if we were rolling out there midweek against Campbell or Wilmington or whoever, these guys may get a chance to cultivate a little bit more. Right now, every pitch counts because all we have is a conference resume.
That's right. And as far as coach, I want to ask Ann Mully, I want to ask you guys, and I know Bubba wants to move on. As far as going back to, since we don't have a midweek, is that a time where you have, I know Cliff's done it, but is that a time when we have a scrimmage midweek on a Tuesday, per se? Is that something you guys would do to keep the team focused, so to speak?
Coach, I'll answer this, and I bet you agree with me. It doesn't matter what you do with the midweek stuff. We can inter-squad all we want to. There is no replication of playing a team in another uniform. So, I mean, it is practice. When you go out, we're going to play purple, gold, or we're going to play white and black, or however you want to put a spin on it. The reality is there's nothing like lining up against somebody else because these guys know each other so well. It's got to be really, really difficult. And I know Cliff is working hard to keep it competitive. That's the only way you try to keep those juices flowing. But it is what it is. And part of this, you got to remember, we're one of two conferences that made this call to play this format. And I think that what you're going to see is at the end of the year, the teams that maintain more regularity are going to have a greater likelihood of being in it for the long haul.
Totally agree. And Dave, to answer your question, for pitchers who are not getting any or little game-like experience, the answer is yes. Any other reason? No. As far as scrimmages in the middle of the week.
All right, and you both make the great point that it's a fact that we're playing each other, so it doesn't really gain us any ground other than just, I guess, the going through the week of where you absolutely have nothing to do until basically like Thursday, Friday, in that range. So, Mully, you made the great point, too, of the very fact of it's like a football earlier in the show. It's like a football schedule, which we're not these guys, including the coaching staff, are not used to. So I know we have to. I know we have to get used to a COVID year, no excuses and all that, but it still has played a factor, including going back to not beating a dead horse, the Houston series. Since that Houston series, man, we haven't been I know we've had games where we didn't have – the light bulb wasn't on, but, man, it just seems like that Houston series really the rails, like as far as the consistency we're talking about, has really been big, that issue. Since the Houston non-series.
Yeah, but Dave, you also have to look at the competition prior to that non-series. So it's, I mean, we're in the meat of the lineup now, right? Like UCF was better than maybe expected. Wichita State, so they opened up two weekends with Houston. So they're 8-0. Right. So they look like, you know, fresh press. And then now Tulane comes out of nowhere. Nobody thought Tulane was going to lead the conference at this point. So I think you have to look at who, you know, kind of who we've played before we make the evaluation that the Houston non-series caused a follow-up. Man, it's baseball, and these are young people, and there's lots going on. And when you're as talented as this club is, you don't worry about the upside. You have to manage the downside. And right now, it's kind of a little helter-skelter. But, again, 12 games left, conference tournament coming up. It'll all work out. Is this the team to get to Omaha? I don't know. Nobody knows. But there's still the factor that comes into play that it's about getting hot at the right time, and the right time's coming up.
Last weekend, we got one solid start. Of course, Gavin Williams against UCF this weekend. Three out of our four starts were good. Jake Kuchmaner, he looked more like himself, or it seemed as though we couldn't watch the game, but better numbers for Jake this weekend. What do you guys think about his performance? Coach O, go ahead.
Yeah. Kuch's experience means an awful lot. He has a way of not having his best stuff, but through experience and knowledge, he finds ways to get through innings. And I think that was certainly a part of this weekend as well. Good to see Tyler Smith have a good outing. No question he needed one. He had been a little shaky the last couple of times out, but the Pirates are going to need him down the stretch too. You mentioned three of the four, and we talk about a spot starter that the Pirates find that guy, and he is in the bullpen somewhere. And when the Pirates find that guy, then I think we're back to a really, really solid rotation. We all know, we've talked a lot tonight about the mentality of the game. And when Carson Wisenhunt is not on the mound, that doesn't have an effect on position players, but position players have confidence in a guy like that when he toes the rubber versus maybe an unknown. And that is a part of the play as well.
No yeah, question. Let's not let it be lost on us that the last full season the Pirates played, they had a pretty good cat by the name of Alec Burleson. They had a pretty good cat by the name of Spencer Brickhouse. They had a pretty good cat by the name of Brian Pye. I mean, when you start to look at that, this is a team that's with. Yeah, I know we've all seen the movie Major League, and you go, the roster comes out, and you're like, well, who are these guys? I mean, who would have thought that Makarevich and Coach O, I remember listening to you and Corey doing the broadcast of maybe the first game of the year, and one of you guys brought up the fact that Clifford made a comment that Makarevich really didn't think that kid was going to play, but he was so productive in scrimmages in the fall. They had to keep him in the lineup next year. You know, the dude's an everyday guy. But you've got him, you got Moylan, there's a lot of young dudes out there that are still trying to figure this thing out. And we're seeing freshmen or COVID freshmen, one of the two that are in a position that no college baseball player has ever been in. These true freshmen probably played some summer ball, but it was still under really weird guidelines and restrictions or whatever. It's a different deal. Again, everybody in the country is dealing with it. But I think this club's going to be okay, and it's just going to be a matter of not pressing a panic button. And think about how different this show will be next week if the Pirates come out and win four against Tulane. Like the world, everything will be right with the world. So it can change on a dime.
No question about it, guys. Let's do our PGX players of the week. We'll start off with, we have, of course, you want to do the Bubba, the PGX pitcher of the week first. We'll do that first, if you'd like.
Yeah, we'll start off with the pitcher of the week. Brought to you by pgxgloves.com. We appreciate Mark Minakazi and his sponsorship of the PGX Player of the Week and everything he does for the program. Could have very easily been Gavin Williams again, but we went with Tyler Smith, what a performance. Coach O referenced it just a few minutes ago. Tyler Smith, season-long outing of 6 innings, 1 run. It was earned on 3 hits, 4 strikeouts. And the impressive thing, last week he threw 65 pitches in 2 innings. This week he needed just 66 to go a season high, 6 innings. So congratulations to Tyler Smith and Coach O first, and then Mully. What are your thoughts on his performance?
I think the numbers that you just gave us, Bubba, the 66 pitches in 6 innings, that's not just effective. That's highly efficient. And for a pitcher to work through that when they need to save bullpen arms, especially as we've said in these 4-game series, but his outing, fabulous, outstanding, any way you want to put it. But he was spot on this week.
Yeah, Coach, I would agree. And I do find it in thought this at the time, a little curious that he was moved out of the game with having only thrown 66. But I think that was an effort to say, hey, let's take him out now for down the road, in that he had a super positive experience, and that's something he can sleep on and build on, as opposed to you leave him out there, one or two things happens, and it greatly diminishes that outing. So I think that was a pretty savvy move by the staff there to say, hey, let's kind of get him out while the getting's good. And it's not that we're afraid he's going to implode. It's that we want him to have had a great outing, and he did.
And, guys, that's the beautiful thing about him is the very fact that we need him. He's a vital piece, being a guy that's senior leadership, a guy that's played a lot of baseball in the purple and gold, and we really need him. Speaking of Mully with consistency, he's a guy that you can give the ball. He has a lot of command, and I think that as time goes on, when it comes to crunch time, when it comes to the tournament for the conference, and when it comes to regional, potential super regional, or even Omaha, he's the guy that you would give the ball, knowing that he gives you a really good chance to win the game.
Well, and I would agree, but maybe disagree respectfully. I think his problem this year is he has been terribly inconsistent. And he's a guy that you expect just what you described, but he hasn't been that right guy. So I mean, I think that holds true with Cooch Maynard. I think that there are expectations, and when you pencil the lineup in and you've got the rotation set and you go, all right, this is the way we're going to go, it's kind of like talking about having a plan to fight Mike Tyson. It's all great until he punches you in the mouth.
Yeah.
So I think he needs to go out and look, a 66 pitch outing in 6 innings is just not realistic to think he's going to recreate that every time he goes out. But to go out and give a solid, 90 to 100 pitches, 6 innings, that's, if he could do that every time, that's what any club in America, it doesn't matter the level of baseball, that's what they need.
You know, I'm baseball guys being suspicious, but y'all are that too. But being superstitious like you are, I can't believe they let him go 6 innings on 66 pitches just because that's 666. Seems like they'd have made him throw one more.
Well, and you know what? Maybe they didn't realize it until. And I don't think Cliff. Listen, I was highly superstitious, still am. I don't know if Coach O was that way. I think he was. But it's some of the things that we used to find as subtle nuances that we did to make ourselves feel good. They don't do that. I mean, the new guys, it's a whole different deal. I mean, I would go games without washing certain pieces of apparel. But I don't know that the world does that anymore. I mean, they are a change in hell. Well, we're in the big leagues, and the big leaguers are playing a 7-inning game or putting a runner on second base to decide a tie ball game. The world is a different place.
All right, Bubba, and you want to go the PGX player of the game?
Yeah, speaking of consistency, we've talked about the consistency throughout the season of Connor Norby and Thomas Francisco and some of the bats in this lineup. a guy who got off to a rough start, but man, has he been consistent the last 12 games, is Zach Agnos. And Zach Agnos, 5 out of 13 against Wichita State, and he reached base in 10 out of his 18 plate appearances. Two home runs, a pair of doubles, 8 runs driven in, and he is something like 18 out of his last 42 in his last 12 games, so batting .430 in that stretch, and on-base percentage of .530.
And, Bum, I'm going to tell you this. He's going to be my pick. You know, the coaching staff was really big on Agnos Zach as a pitcher, two-way guy. I'm going to go so far as to say he's going to be a huge spot start. And I know his numbers are not very good. They're actually bad. But I'm telling you, that dude's a good enough player. And it's funny. You get hot at the plate, all of a sudden you become a better pitcher. You start to gain that confidence to know that you can play this game. So, I think Agnos is a big piece of the opportunity for success for the Pirates.
Yeah, and I'll say that 6 weeks ago we all thought the bottom of the order could certainly be pitched to, but Zach Agnos changed that as he started coming around a little with the bat and then a little more. He also started developing power, and now he's a force. Actually, he's a middle of the order type guy the way he's hitting right now.
No question about it, guys. Quickly, we don't have time. We're running out of time, but we want to do the scoreboard if we can, Bubba. I know that we have some scores, certainly around the league that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, with the Pirates having such a big series with Tulane next weekend, just wanted to take a look around the American and then as well as regionally and nationally. But we'll start off with the Green Wave. They took 3 out of 4 from Houston down in New Orleans.
Not a surprise.
And they're certainly the hottest team in the league right now.
They may be the hottest team in the country right now, Coach.
Yeah, that's true, too.
And then you had UCF, who the Pirates found out last weekend. What an excellent club they have, although inconsistent for much of the season. This weekend, they lost the series opener in Orlando to Memphis 12-2 in just 7 innings, got run ruled, but they responded, put something like 42 runs on the board in the next 3 games to take that series 3-1.
I'm going to tell you right now, if UCF could pitch it a little better and play a little better defense, they would be something to be reckoned with. Those kids can hit, and they can hit, and they can find their way on base. And now, again, that was our pitching staff gives up, 30-some free passes between hit-by-pitch and walks. But I'm telling you, that's an offensive club that's going to be okay. I really like their team offensively.
Yeah, that's a club also that had high expectations, and we don't know who we'll see each game, the good one or the bad one. But when they came into Greenville, I don't think any of us were aware of how young they were. 4 freshmen in the lineup speaks for that.
Last series to discuss in the American, 2 clubs, the Pirates, are going to be facing down the road as the Pirates close out the year with 8 consecutive road games following next weekend's home series with Tulane, and that is Cincinnati and USF. Cincinnati, a club the Pirates swept to open league play. Them and the Bulls won 2 games apiece this weekend as they split.
Yeah, and that's it. Those two, again. The next 3 series, we need to find a way to win 8 ball games. Is that right? Let's see, 3-6. Yeah, I think 2-2 this weekend against Tulane. I mean, love to go 3-1, love to go 4-0, love to go 5-0 if there's a way. But I think then past that, it's a 3-win series to do what the club is trying to do. If not, it's going to be real simple. you're going to have to win the conference tournament. I mean, in my opinion, and without having those midweek boosters, those RPI hits, I think that's what the postseason, I think that's what it's going to boil down to.
Yeah, and just a couple of points about both clubs. Cincinnati under Scott Guggins, always, every year, better at the end of the year than at the beginning. Right now they have 10 wins in the league. And USF expected to be the last place club in the league. They were picked that way, and not so. They themselves with 7 wins. So Pirates will be tested in both of those places. Remember, both are away series.
No question about it, guys. It's going to be interesting to see how the league shapes out, and obviously a lot of baseball. Bubba, do you want to put the questions up there from certainly with Pirate Al? In fact, there we go. He says, think we're going to go 9-3 with win a couple games in the AAC tourney to host. What do you think, Coach O and Mully?
Coach, go ahead.
Okay. All right. I certainly think 9-3 and a couple of games in the tourney, I think that would very possibly I won't even say possibly. I'd say a strong possibility that we would be a host. As of today, we would be that. And 9-3, pretty strong. A couple of games in the tournament, yes. But better than that, winning the regular season and the tournament, as we said, or one or the other, will be good. But winning both could even surpass being just a host.
No question.
Again, the vacuum that we're living in, we could go 9-3, win the regular season, win the conference tournament, but it's all going to be decided May 10th as to whether or not we host. Now, we could go in somewhere as a number one seed, whether or not we're given the opportunity to host at the stadium. But, I would say that resume cements your opportunity to go somewhere as a one or two.
Sorry, Molly, I thought you were done. Go ahead.
No, it's going to be very interesting to see what May 10th brings.
There was some talk. I did Coach O, Molly, I don't know if you guys know this. There was some talk last week about the NCAA possibly choosing 20 sites instead of 16 on the 10th and then narrowing it down to 16 later. Was that just rumors?
Well, before I get to that, Bubba, let me just say that as far as super regionals go, they're not going to determine where those sites will be until after the regionals are played. And I was more along those lines. But as far as the May 10th date, Bubba, they came out last Friday and said just that. They're now going to select 20 teams, of which 16 are possible to host on May 10th, which that narrows it down quite a bit.
Yeah, it's good. That's good. It's a good compromise. I mean, it's a good compromise in a situation where I think there's much ado about nothing. In my opinion, not making a political statement or a COVID statement. The reality is everybody's playing college baseball right now. We're fixing something that's not broken, but it is what it is, and we gotta go with it.
No question about it, and. Chuck says, what's wrong with the pitching, Coach O?
Well, I think earlier on the broadcast, there was a term used about inconsistency. And a little was mentioned about Gavin Williams being a very consistent pitcher. And for the most part, we've had some guys that just haven't found their roles, but more or less day-to-day brings something different. What has been impressive is that some guys, when not having a good outing, respond to a good one. But what's wrong with the pitching? I think all of us on this broadcast said it earlier, Mully being the first one in that. Just inconsistency, particularly in the bullpen, especially in the bullpen.
And, guys, before we let you go, let's I want to get your keys for the victory as far as Tulane. I think I know, Mully, we've had a theme tonight. What's your keys for Tulane this weekend?
Yeah, be consistent. Do kind of play. Every guy needs to play their game and stay within the team concept. You know, there's no need to press the panic button. It's just try to get a little bit better this week. And, you know, again, consistent effort will typically get you where you want to be.
Coach O, obviously they've been playing very well in all respects, but looking at the numbers before our broadcast, Tulane's starting pitching has been very good.
Oh, yeah. They're Friday night guy, and that was something – that was another point I was going to bring up earlier during one of the questions when you guys were talking about how there are a lot of arms out there and a lot of guys that throw hard, but everybody has a Friday night guy. That seems to be the term now. And in so doing, Tulane has one of the best in the league. And this guy can match Gavin Williams pitch for pitch. But at the same time, where their pitching is strong, I certainly like the Pirates offensively a little better. And with that being said, coming back to Clark LeClair, I think, will be big for this series. Not that they only won two in Wichita, but just that they'll get back home, be around our fans, and I think that's where we will – again, a term I've used today, get our feet back under us.
Sounds good. And, of course, we'll talk about the games here, Coach. Is games 1, 2, and 4 on ESPN Plus, or game 3 will be on Pirates.com. And the games are 1, 4, and 1 starting off Friday night for game 1. And, of course, game 3 on Saturday will be at 4 p.m. and on Sunday will be 12:30. Of course, Friday will be, of course, the doubleheader at Clark LeClair Stadium. And don't forget, you can hear our good friend Coach O and Corey Glore with the call on the radio as well. So we're looking forward to a big series, guys. Thank you so much, Mully. I know we've gone a little bit over, buddy, but I appreciate you very much for another great visit with us. Coach O, as always, thank you, guys. It means a lot. Appreciate you. And look forward to having you guys on real soon.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Everybody have a great week.
Yes.
All right, take care. All right, good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. All right, appreciate them very much, to Dr. Gary Overton and, of course, Mike Mully. Mullis, we call him Mully, of course, and appreciate it. Guys, I know there's a few things we want to get to it, and then we'll get out of here, right, Bubba?
Yeah, before we talk about some of the Pirates and the pros and where they're going to be starting off their professional season if they're in the minor leagues and what Jeff Hoffman and Sean Armstrong, to name a couple, are doing in the MLB, just taking a look at some of the other scores and results from this weekend nationally. How about Notre Dame sweeping the Tar Heels? They put 19 on North Carolina today. So Leighton Jarrett's ball club continues to play extremely well. That series was up in South Bend.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that with the ACC, it's been almost like was it cannibals where they're eating each other? You know, that very thing is, this has been a very, very vicious league this year for sure, and that can happen with a lot of teams. I think what was it, Bubba, that Rune said it was an 11 out of the ACC. He projected preseason when we had him on. So it was way up there.
Seems like it. That interview was so long ago, I don't recall. Yeah. But yes, it was an extremely high number.
I think it was 14. So
14? Okay.
And then
anyway, it was definitely double digits.
Another result. Sorry, go ahead.
No, just go ahead. I was moving on.
Another result that caught my eye, Kennesaw State taking 2 out of 3 from Georgia Tech. And always a fan of the little guy, so to speak. And Kennesaw State's had very solid baseball down through the years. But nice to see them take a series from Georgia Tech. And then in recent weeks, you had Georgia Southern going out to Norman and taking 2 out of 3 from the Sooners.
No question. And anything can happen. That's what makes college baseball so great, guys. Anything can happen. And just like you talked about, Bubba, I think that's great for the sport. Maybe not for Georgia Tech with Kennesaw State with their winning the series, but anything can happen. And just like with our Pirates this week, coming weekend, we could do very well or maybe not. So definitely we'll have to be consistent and moving right along, so, right, Bubba?
Yep. Some other scores of interest from the top 25, a pair of top 25 teams that East Carolina knows a lot about. Of course, the Pirates lost in extra innings to Old Dominion back at the beginning of the season. And the Monarchs took two out of three from number 15, Charlotte, up in Norfolk.
Wow.
They had lost 6-2 in game one, but then won, had blowout wins in games two and three, winning 14-2 and 10-0 in seven innings today, with the 10-run rule in effect for travel day. And then you also had a couple of
All right, Bubba, we lost you there. I don't know what happened to Bubba.
Died,
hello.
There we go. We got you back now.
All right.
All right. Bubba's back.
Clemson swept number 7 Louisville. Clemson was right around 500 entering the weekend, and they got a much-needed series sweep over the Cardinals down at Doug Kingsmore Stadium. So it will be interesting to see in the coming weeks. They're still – you know, I want to say 22-18. So they're going to have to probably win the tournament unless they get extremely hot. But they definitely have a lot of momentum coming off a sweep of number 7 Louisville. And then in the SEC, you had a huge series taking place down at Florida's new park. They had split the first two games with Vandy, and then they were winning late in that ball game today as they were looking to take a series from the Commodores. I'm not sure what ended up happening in that one.
Yeah, no worries on Clemson. They'll be in. They're one of the 14 teams in the ACC.
But before we put this show to bed, guys, I'm taking a look at some of the former Pirates and what they're doing this baseball season, or what they will be doing, or where they'll be doing it. Jeff Hoffman, of course, moved over from Colorado to Cincinnati. He's had 5 starts with the Reds, and he's 2-1 so far with a 3.33 ERA. So great to see Jeff Hoffman pitching well. Sean Armstrong has seen 9 appearances, all in relief for Baltimore. Unfortunately, he's struggled thus far, but hopefully Sean will start pitching better in the coming games. Then in the minor leagues, you have guys like Brickhouse. Brickhouse is out in Oregon, high A ball in the Diamondbacks organization. And then you have Cruz. It's going to be in AAA and with the Cardinals organization. He'll be pitching in Memphis. You'll have with the Peoria Chiefs. You have Burley, and that is high A ball. And then in that same league, it is a divisional. Of course, opposite divisions, but then they also have Bryant Packard in the Tigers organization, high A, and I'm trying to remember the other one, one of the recent alums. But congratulations to those guys. Most of those guys, promotions from when they last played in 2019, and I'm very interested to see how they'll be doing here as they get their season started this week.
And speaking of Pirates and the Pros, Bubba, how did we do outside of one player being drafted? How did the Pirates fare signing free agent contracts on the football side of things?
Yeah, as far as that one guy that got drafted, that of course was Deontay Smith going in the 4th round to the Cincinnati Bengals. And so congratulations to Deontay. Signed a deal. I'm trying to remember how many years it was, but I want to say it was about $3.5 or $4 million. So Deontay did very well there. About a $500,000 signing bonus, if I saw correctly. And then Blake Prohl signed a free agent deal with the Minnesota Vikings. And last I heard, Jake Verity, of course, one of the best place kickers, if not maybe the best place kicker in East Carolina history. I think he may be headed to Minnesota as well, but I have not seen officially for Jake.
Other football news, we picked up a big wide receiver transfer from the Tar Heels, committed as part of the 2020 class and played in one game last year. Very talented wide receiver. Kind of surprised to see him transfer. Evidently a lot of depth there at that position for Carolina. And it's kind of part of that, hey, you can transfer without sitting out rule.
No question about it. And he actually has all 4 years. So that's a big pickup for the Pirates.
And that was Ray Rose, Ray Rose, yeah. That wide receiver from North Carolina.
No question. And this with Mike Houston, I'm telling you guys. No doubt. All right, guys, do you have anything before we go?
Crickets.
I got a lot of lag.
We'll tell everybody, by the way, tomorrow is the deadline. I told the folks at ECU that I would remind you guys, I would remind them and remind all of us who haven't signed up. Tomorrow is the priority deadline for season tickets. Call 1-800-DIAL-ECU, or you can go to ecupirates.com. They've been really busy, and we're hoping to get that number. I think it was, guys, I heard the number was 14,400 last year. So we could easily beat that. Again, ecupirates.com, 1-800-ECU. Don't forget also to get your app. I forgot to do that too. The Appalachian State tickets, I was told, still a lot of tickets for Appalachian State, that first game on September 2nd in Charlotte at Bank of America Stadium. So get your tickets for that.
Yeah,
for those
there's going to be a lot of tickets for that Appalachian State.
Yeah.
Prizes.
And no question. So hopefully they'll have a lower price ticket now that they'll be 100% or definitely by that point. All right, Bubba and Kyle, thank you so much. Want to thank Mike Mullis. Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Dr. Gary Overton, for being on Extra Innings, brought to you by Next Level Training Center. You can go to nextleveltc.com. You can give them a call at 252-756-NEXT. And definitely call Trent and Gaynell. They'll take care of you with your baseball player, your softball player, and the family for sure. All right, until next time, you've been watching and listening to Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates!
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!